microphones and make a podcast. Two microphones and you make a podcast.
Hi, this is Joyce.
And this is Mary Beth.
Welcome to the Modern Yoga Podcast. This morning we are Zooming.
For no illness or COVID related reason, just for convenience.
Just for convenience, yes. Mary Beth has a pretty hectic next, 24? When do you leave?
Not till Sunday morning at like 4 a.m. I know. I'm making my life sound hectic in relation to you. And you're probably like, are you kidding me? You have like 72 more hours to do your stupid packing.
You're not going to shower until then, are you?
No, I think I will.
Oh.
But because I'm still going to teach Saturday and everything. So a shower will come as part of that.
I still have you on the schedule for Saturday, right? Let me do a quick check here. Yes. Woo! Well, you've seen how many subs we need in September.
Oh my gosh. It's been, and I've been a weird offender of that too, because I've been gone and back and gone and back and gone again. So it is hard to figure out who's around. And I hate that because it does interrupt the continuity a little bit. At book club the other night, talking about traveling, some of the ladies were, you know, oh, so you're not going to be Monday. You're not going to be Saturday. And I said, please still go. Why do we do this? Just go. It's the class you go to. Go to the class. Even if your teacher is being subbed, that's sometimes the best.
And this is a great conversation to have, considering that what we're talking about today, if we're 5 minutes in, is our different class types. But we want to talk about being new and what yoga is and what the practice means. And like, the practice is about you, meaning the student. It's not about the teacher. And so, yes, we all have our favorite teachers, and I'm kind of saying that in quotes, but you're really the teacher. And I'm not meaning you or me. I mean, like, you decide how you're going to listen and how you're going to show up. And in the case where you have a favorite class on Monday night at 8 p.m. with Mary Beth Twerty, and she decides to go to Aruba.
One happy island.
It's not. There's such an opportunity when you have a sub.
Oh, my goodness. I've had some of the, I mean, you do resist it. And sometimes it's not your favorite teacher or your favorite practice, but that's okay. And that's good because you learn something different, or you learn about your own reactions or your own issues a little bit, if you allow that. I mean, it doesn't mean you're right or wrong. Could be a shitty teacher, could be an awesome teacher.
There are no shitty teachers at Modern Yoga. Let's face it.
But the point is to take it in and then look at it and see why you're reacting this way. It's sometimes I joke before class with where people are putting their mats. It's like you always park at the same place when you go to the mall too. So imagine that instead of parking outside the Dillard's shoe department, speaking just for myself, you're forced to park somewhere else. And then you either run into somebody that you never would have run into because you were on the other side of the mall, or there's some awesome sale item that you would have missed. I don't know, anything. But, you know, we have to let go of some of the perceived control we have. And this is one of the things that yoga's for. So it's actually a great opportunity to open yourself and embrace the quote unquote yoga experience. It's a simple thing, but it's true.
Were you ever teacher avoidant, or?
I've never been teacher avoidant. No, I recognize that it makes me uncomfortable, but I love it because, as I'm sure you'll attest to, you never don't learn something from that. Yes. Either from the person at the front of the room or from yourself and whatever internal dialogue.
Yes. And you'll notice that we haven't said a damn thing about a pose.
Correct. Yeah. It's such an after, not an afterthought, but the poses, you know, are to occupy the mind and tire the body for a better meditation experience.
So when you Google yoga, well, when you Google what is yoga, at least from my computer this morning, the first answer that comes up is yoga is an ancient practice that involves physical poses, concentration, and deep breathing. I really like this answer, especially as a first Google answer, because it's not very complicated. Because let's face it, if you, as a yoga teacher, if I ask you or somebody asks you, well, what is yoga? You kind of have to pause and you're like, do you have 5 hours?
Yeah, you blank out because there's too much to say. And that narrows it down nicely because it doesn't talk about the difficulty of the poses. It doesn't talk about flexibility or stretch or strength or religion or anything specific. It merely links or yokes breath and movement and meditation or mind.
And the physical poses are the third limb on an 8-limb path. So yoga has essentially 8, how would you describe them? Not qualities, but practices. And the first two are the yamas and niyamas, which we've covered all of the yamas in our podcasts now, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure we've released the last one, and then we're about to start the niyamas, but they're the ethical principles of yoga. And essentially the yamas are the don't practices, like nonviolence, and the niyamas are the do's. I'm simplifying.
Now Jay Giles Band is in my brain.
And then the poses are third. And the poses are a way to practice the first two limbs. So you're taking a look at how you practice things like nonviolence and non-attachment, and how you practice purity. And the poses are a way to sort of, they're just a platform.
Yeah. It's like a model. It's like a little, you know, like you build a model of a house or of a plane or of a city to see what it's going to be like when it's real. And it's sort of like that. You can use poses like that. Let's take these principles and how can we apply it to something so simple as a forward fold?
Yeah. Well, what if someone says, I can't forward fold? Or let me take that a little bit, make that a little different. How many times have you heard when somebody understands or realizes that you're a yoga teacher, I can't do yoga. Mm-hmm. I can't touch my toes. I can't, whatever the physical thing, my back hurts, my this, my that.
So much. And it's frustrating and it's a challenge to not answer in a frustrated way. Pat Laub yesterday was mentioning someone she had been trying to get to come to yoga, begging her almost. And the woman keeps saying, I'm too fat for yoga. And she won't come with her because of it.
Oh, that's... And so what else is she not doing?
Mm-hmm.
What else is she preventing herself from doing because of something?
Yeah, holding yourself back from... I mean, we all do it in various ways. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why it's so wonderful and important when someone has a good first experience. You know, we talked to Jen Erdelak a few episodes ago, and she was always a great ambassador for that. Feeling like she didn't look like a quote unquote yoga person, but she was just ready for something. And so, you know, what it looked like, be damned, she came you know, she had health problems, knee replacement, everything. Yeah. She's still, I don't care. I'm coming for the experience. I'm not going to pay attention to what I look like or who's looking at me or what I'm expected to look like. And what a breakthrough. And that breakthrough is available to almost all of us.
Right.
If we let it.
And let's face it, nobody's looking at you. Mm-mm. Maybe the teacher, but the teacher is looking at everyone in a way to keep you safe and supported.
But when you're new, it does feel like people are looking at you. And if there's a, you know, really quote unquote accomplished physically, you know, yogi nearby, and they're kicking it up a notch where you're taking it down a notch, that certainly can feel like somebody's looking and judging. But hopefully the door we open is to realize that we ourselves are the one looking and judging more than that outside person.
Exactly.
That's the hard part to share ahead of time. There's a lot of words we can use to share, but you got to like experience it. And then you realize, mm-hmm. which is again, why Jen Ertelak is such a great example. Cause she did get there pretty fast. I'm the one who's in charge of my practice and looking at my practice and experiencing it. None of these other people are.
But it's also not a like leave me alone kind of like I'm on this mat alone kind of thing. You know, everybody's doing the same thing and the breath connects the whole class. And so in that sense, the class is very supportive because we're all in different places and different bodies, mm-hmm. But we're breathing and moving together. And I don't want to say that's where it stops, but that's kind of where it stops as far as like, how deep did you go? Mm-hmm. Or I did this and Mary Beth didn't, you know, it's not that at all. Mm-mm. It's like, I'm going to respect where I'm at and make the best decisions for myself. And in just doing that, you're giving that to the people around you.
Mm-hmm. And that is the magic and the hard part. So I go to a class where, and I get there and my favorite teacher isn't there and it's a sub. And I don't like the way the sub does things. And I wanted to do a headstand and the sub didn't call that. And I'm really good at something else. And whatever the case may be, or she called something difficult that I can't do. And that took my ego down a notch because I'm still in my head about wanting to look like I know what I'm doing. So you see what I'm doing here is that all these things are about self, not about who the teacher is. And it doesn't mean it's good or bad, but it's worth observing.
And again, we haven't said anything about poses mm-hmm. specifically. You're yes. talking about decision, you know, like what's going on in your head.
And I think that's where people first become so self-conscious, of course, is the poses. And then they move on to, I just can't meditate. I just can't do the breath. But initially, you know, like all of us humans, you feel exposed physically, visually.
Most people, I would guess, come to yoga. Well, like our slogan says, come for the workout, stay for the yoga. And I will.
Got to reel them in somehow.
I will admit that I stole that slogan from.
Borrowed. You said borrowed.
I borrowed from a friend of mine that I met at yoga teacher training many years ago. She owns a studio in Mobile, Alabama called Glow Yoga. And their slogan is come for the workout, stay for the yoga. And at that training I was at, she was considering changing it. And I understand why. Mm-hmm. But I also think it's a great slogan because I definitely started because I had heard it was a pretty good workout. Mm-hmm. And
we've talked before, conversely, it's the opposite for me.
Yeah.
When I saw that, I was like, oh, don't ruin my yoga by calling it a workout. And I resisted that a lot, which is why this is good because we have both points of view here.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I had heard that it was also obviously healing, but I don't know where I heard anything from. And I think this is maybe true of most people. Like, I had this yoga knowledge before I did yoga. It was very limited, but mm-hmm. I had made some decisions about whatever knowledge I had absorbed at, I don't even know when. Mm-hmm. I had always kind of been yoga curious. Mm-hmm. And I was ice skating and I, went one side was a little stronger than the other. And I kind of had always thought that yoga, the practice, might be balancing for me. And that's what I knew. And so I went to my first yoga class, a little studio opened by my house, and I could do things because I was doing things on the ice all the time. The physical stuff was, I don't want to say easy because I was still learning like what these poses were.
But it came pretty naturally. You had an aptitude for it.
I was, my very first half pigeon, the tears just like ran down my face and it was very relieving, but I was laughing. I'm like, I don't even really know what's going on here,
mm-hmm.
but it was so, it felt so good. It was such a good release that I kind of chased that mm-hmm. For a while. But I don't know that I was practicing yoga, but I don't know that I really understood it or what it was doing to me or what I was actually practicing for years.
Right.
What about you?
Yeah. And the thing is that you think you know. And right. you're enjoying it and you're making progress, especially mm-hmm. physically or with the breath. And you start by just knowing it feels good. It's a pause. It's maybe putting your hand on your heart and hearing or saying kind words, which there's precious little opportunity in life for that. Is it the Amazon man who's coming, the mailman?
I don't know. I might want to open the window. It is. No, somebody was going for a jog.
Oh,
and he's
poor
back.
Person.
He's laying down.
Aw.
But go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. Before you really know what the magic is working on you or the principles of yoga that you're accidentally ingesting, it starts with just, this feels right for some reason. And sometimes it starts with a pause and kind words and gentle touch. I mean, we don't treat ourselves very gently.
No. I liked how Becky, one of our teachers, said it during a teacher's meeting a while ago, that she is teaching mindfulness through physical movement. And so I really, that hit home because when you're new, you're so focused on poses, like you're so tuned in,
mm-hmm.
You might be thinking about right down to like your pinky toe. Cause the teacher mm-hmm. says, what's your pinky toe doing? Or feel the connection between the ball of your foot and the floor, or feel your left shoulder versus your right shoulder. Like how often during the day or any other kind of workout are you so tuned in? They're so focused on, tuning into specific parts of your body to just see how they feel without judging them.
Right. And then it lets go. Whatever else you might have been thinking about is now on the back burner.
Yes.
Because you've got this thing in the foreground. And that's the beauty of a moving meditation. If you think you're not good at meditation or you can't sit still and be quiet, this is still meditation.
You are meditating because
you're focusing on this one little thing or object mm-hmm. and it has relaxed the whole rest of your mind.
Exactly. And as you mentioned at the beginning, I don't remember how you said it, but the poses, did you say exhaust the body?
I might have. I've said that before. I mean, I don't know if Google would support me on
that. How about prepares?
But that's how I've always thought of it, is sometimes is you know, you can have that better relaxation at the end if you have physically exhausted yourself.
Or prepared yourself, maybe.
Sure. Let's use the word prepared.
I'm exhausted.
So one of the theories of the origin, and I could get James in here, but
we don't have all day, dude.
Is that the physical practice prepares the body for seated meditation. So traditionally people meditate for hours at a time. And if your hip hurts or your back hurts or your shoulder hurts, your point of focus may not be trying to connect to your higher power. It may be, holy crap, this is uncomfortable. And you might be constantly shifting. Not that you have to stay perfectly still. And that is not a perfect practice either. But, and we see this in our daily lives, like my back hurts when I drive, or if I stand too long, or so the physical poses provide healing benefits. Does that mean that you have to do, you know, handstands and complete binds? You have to bind yourself up as a pretzel? Absolutely not. Mm-hmm. It's sometimes the very simplest thing, like a supported bridge pose, can do wonders if, you know, you have low back issues or your low back is tight and you just rest on a block for a while. Like, that could change your entire day.
And just the opportunity and or permission to do that. Like, if you don't go to a yoga class, who of us, except for yours truly, is going to give yourself 5 minutes with a block under your back and just let that be? No, because there's dishes in the sink and there's the phone ringing and whatever else.
Right. And on the mental side, do you take time during the day, say an hour, to actually take a look at your thoughts and how you're and what your reactions are? And you, most of us don't. And so let's bring religion and spirituality into this, or just talk about it for a moment. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like yoga is religious?
I absolutely not. No, I don't feel yoga is religious. I will say that my answer to, you know, there's some Christians who think yoga is bad. It's invoking the devil, which I still don't get, but okay. We're not worshiping false gods or anything I'm not sure what the argument actually is, but as a Christian, it's made me realize that I pray and connect with my own religion or spirituality a heck of a lot more since I've been doing yoga, because it is that pause and that time to come inside myself. So sometimes I hate to even share that, because I don't want people to think it is at all religion. I don't care who you worship, whether it's Nutella or the devil or Jesus or none at all. You know, your own light inside, your own divinity, it's just the opportunity. And then sharing it has been even more helpful. So I don't know. What's your answer?
It's the same. I feel like if you are a very religious person, that's your practice, and you can definitely practice that on the mat. However, do we teach any kind of religion or any kind of connection to, we might mention your higher power mm-hmm. every now and then, but we're not, it's yours. So like you said, I don't know what your personal practice is, right?
Right. Ideally, we also shouldn't be bringing any other beliefs into it, politics or anything, right. which can be a struggle. You know, things come up, and that's not what we're there for. It's nobody's beliefs being pushed on you. It's a invitation for you to go inside and find your own beliefs and practice them.
And again, here we are not talking about poses or expectations or
yeah, we're still not
else, what to wear about it. We're not talking about the proper mat. We're not, you know, like this is, and we're not also not talking about the teacher. You were talking about your experience, and it happens no matter what, no matter who the teacher is. You show up on your mat, no matter what
kind of yoga practice
it is, no matter what you're wearing, no matter where you're at. You show
up. That's the yoga practice. And so, relative to us eventually breaking down the class types, you know, being bogged down in what class type to take is also, in my opinion, a mistake.
Yeah.
A mistake for yourself. You're missing out. And that's a hard place to get to until you have a practice that you understand a little better, because then you don't care. You know your body. Like I've said before in class, we all make the same letters, but we have different handwriting. Mm-hmm. So it is with your yoga practice. We can be doing the same pose or the same breath or trying to, but yours is going to look different than mine and then your neighbor, no matter what the title of the class is.
And let's face it, if you're really focusing on the pose and your connection, you're not looking at anybody else. You have no idea what the person next to you did. Mm-hmm. I think it was you that said, I don't even remember who was on the mat next to me.
It gets to be that way. Yeah. You don't even remember who was in class, what they were wearing, what they might have said to you.
Like 5 days later, you're like, oh, I think I saw. So let's just talk about the classes and how they work at least at Modern Yoga.
Right, at Modern Yoga. And it's something that we've had some amount of conversation about, because if you go around looking at yoga classes, there are some hilariously named ones. And then there's some very understandably named ones, but that certainly does not mean they're uniform across the board. And actually, it just stopped into my head right now, a little laughing about a few years ago, I think before COVID, we had a fun Halloween, and I wanted to call it MB's Spooky Flow.
Yeah.
But, you know, that sounds a little... Don't really want to talk about MB's. Listen, flow. I'm so glad MB's flow is over. Post-menopause, no more spooky flow for MB. But anyway, so James renamed it to something like just
Halloween flow or something. Yeah.
And we brought in fun lights and drew cobwebs on my face.
And oh, you did. I remember that. Mm-hmm. It's kind of in a, it's the, not the same, but it's like the hip hop yoga we do on holidays. Like it's not really yoga.
Right. Just a fun,
And it's fun to just kind of break it up and not purposefully not take yourself so seriously.
Not take ourselves so seriously, yogis.
Yeah. So we practice ujjayi breathing with the physical practice of the asanas, and ujjayi breathing is a method of breathing where you close your mouth and you breathe in and out of your nose.
Shut your mouth.
Mary Beth and James and some other people have very powerful and loud ujjayi breath. I try.
My name might actually be Mary Breath.
Mary Breath. I've heard other names. Mary. Mary that starts with the B-R-E-A. And I guess by the book, your breath should be very audible, but sometimes it's just audible between your ears, and that's good too. But you should be able to hear your own breath, and a lot of times you'll be able to hear the breath of the person practicing next to you, in front of you, behind you.
And the last thing we want is for the breath to be an impediment, because you're trying to make it sound like something. That's not the way it should work. Your breath should be that helpful tool for your practice, for your movement, for your meditation. So, you know, don't worry about having that strong, beautiful ujjayi breath. That's the soundtrack for your practice, but it's for your practice inside, your soundtrack.
And what's great for any yogi, but particularly a beginner, is if you're starting to pay attention to your breath, then you're doing it correctly.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
So ujjayi breathing is not, because that sniffle through your nose is going to get, it's still an inhale, but your breath is going to, I'm using visuals here, doesn't matter, going to get stuck in your chest. And we want this breath to come down deeper and lower. So even though you, I feel like the nostrils are just a passageway, because I feel like I'm breathing in and out of my mouth with my mouth closed.
Yeah,
if that
really
makes any
it.
Sense.
I really feel it in the back and lower than, yeah, the nostrils are, again, just like the doorway.
Yeah, yeah. And the breath comes out from the same place. So your abdomen lifts and lowers your diaphragm, which presses or pushes air in and out of your lungs. So the deeper, slower, more controlled your breathing is, the more complete breath you're going to get. And your breathing practice helps your posture.
Mm-hmm. And which is a hard part to get. People struggle with that and then feel like they're doing it wrong. And part of the reason is trying to match the length of breath with the person next to you. Of course, you know, if somebody's a foot taller than you and has been doing this breath for a long time, their inhales and exhales are going to take a lot longer. Just like it's going to take a lot longer for them to drag their big right ham hock to the top of the mat if my leg is 4 inches longer than yours. Yes, exactly. The soundtrack or the energy that it gives you is to facilitate your practice. So yes, you can feel those inhales lift your body parts and the exhales fold you or twist you or whatever the case may be.
Exactly. I remember Jane. So Jane was one of our first, well, one of my first teachers and taught for us at Modern Yoga. I know you practiced with her until she stopped teaching.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember her telling me years and years ago that it took her, she thinks it took her about 6 years to really master the breath.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can't do the breath wrong.
Mm-hmm.
You can definitely get better at it, but like, any awareness to your breath is better than no awareness to your breath. And
yeah, it's like, I'm trying to think of these inexplicable things that are hard to teach someone. So think of like whistling or snapping or blowing a bubble with bubble gum. There are things that you hear about and you can hear instruction on, but you just got to find it, right? Like,
mm-hmm.
Whether you can whistle or not, or snap or not, or blow a bubble or not, it's a thing you got to find within yourself. And we all have a different way for doing it. You know, like there's a trick for each of us. The sweet spot or whatever.
The sum of the benefits of breathing in and out of your nose, particularly using ujjayi breath, are that it improves your concentration. Obviously, I mentioned posture. And it calms your central nervous system.
Mm-hmm.
So I like to relate that to the poses in a way where the poses are just tools to challenge your breathing practice.
Mm-hmm.
And so can you breathe in this pose? And if you can't, then that's when you need to make a change. If your breath gets constricted or you find that you're holding your breath because you're mm-hmm. trying so hard, mm-hmm. then something needs to change. You either need to start breathing or you need to adjust your body. Like you need,
and that's one of the hard parts of yoga, because nobody can see your breath, but they can see your tree pose. So you're trying to hold your breath and clench your teeth just so nobody sees you fall out of tree. And then that's the lesson. Look inside. What about that is making you choose the pose over the breath? Right? So right or wrong, it's maybe an ego thing, whatever, but that's the opportunity then to examine that other thing.
I think it's also, we're trying to, I'm thinking of like the workday, like we're trying to get things right and do things right and possibly better. Mm-hmm. Than somebody else or some, you know, they're trying to move forward in a very competitive work environment. And so you get on the mat and you might find yourself doing the same thing.
Yeah, because that's what we do. I mean, you don't want to not do things correctly in life.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's never the goal.
And maybe at some point you allow yourself to just breathe and you might allow yourself to fall or step out and reset and realize it's not the end of the world. It's not such a big deal. And it might actually make the tree pose that you step back into more stable and more comfortable. And then you see that hopefully filter into your workday.
Mm-hmm.
Like maybe if I take a look at how I'm approaching things and relax a little bit, it actually gets better.
Like the idea of that hip openers benefit more from time than from effort.
Yeah.
You know, that's another little ism you can translate. Are there situations in my life that might benefit from time right now rather than my effort? Like stop beating something to death and give it time and space.
So Ujjayi breath also has a heating and cooling
HVAC.
Yes, on your body. And it helps you release tension as well. Now, I'll just throw out there, there are a lot of breathing practices, and we play around with some of the other ones a little bit sometimes, like at the beginning of class and at the end of class. I shouldn't say play around. We'll teach some of, I know I'll teach some of them at the beginning and end. James definitely does. But generally speaking, in a moving practice, you're going to use Ujjayi. There is a pharmacy of breathing practices though. And that,
can I just say, I don't like, and I'm always annoyed by the single nostril breathing.
You don't practice. Like alternate nostrils?
Don't like alternate. I don't like touching our noses and I don't like it.
But it's not like I you're sticking your finger up your nose.
That makes me a poor yogi, but don't love that.
That's a great breath practice.
I know, but I don't dig it, man.
It's not for you.
Not
for
me.
You shouldn't be practicing alternate nostril breath.
Mm-mm.
So let's talk about the classes that we have at Modern Yoga.
At Modern Yoga.
Should we, I don't know which one to start with. So all the classes except for Yin are based in Ujjayi breathing.
Mm-hmm.
Yin is a little bit different, but we'll get to that in a minute. Vinyasa basically means flow. So the poses are going to connect one to the other with breath. And so...
And that's important to for people out there looking at yoga classes at our studio, other studios, vinyasa, that's an important word because when things are named or in the description have the word vinyasa, you know, this is what that means. And that won't always be the case. You'll go somewhere thinking you're going to have a vinyasa flow yoga class. And while it said yoga, it might not at all be vinyasa and you'll be surprised, which is also okay.
Yes.
Surprise!
So let's just start with hot power because come for the workout and stay for the yoga. So in hot power, you're going to get the most challenge to your breathing practice. You're going to get a lot of strength poses. In yoga, chaturangas are yoga push-ups. And you'll get a lot of push-ups, yoga push-ups. We might say that, but most of the time we say chaturanga.
You love the word chaturanga because it can sound so angry and powerful.
And it's just fun to say.
Chaturanga!
We don't.
Did you ever go to yoga classes where a person without an accent, like a good old American Midwesterner, will suddenly break into chaturanga?
No.
No?
Have you? Obviously.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Did you love it?
Yeah. It's like the... I might have told this story before, but similarly, once at the Giant Eagle grocery store, Jeff and I bought tomatillos, which are the little green paper covered tomatoes, and the do your own checkout voice, right? The computer voice, weigh your bananas, move your bananas to the belt.
Yeah.
We got to those tomatillos and she said, weigh your tomatillos.
No way.
Move your
tomatillos
to the belt.
Did you just want to buy more?
So that, yeah, we were like, look at that. Yeah, baby.
Awesome. We digress.
Just a little.
So in hot power yoga, you're going to get a lot of challenge to the breath. There are going to be a lot of one breath, one movement poses. So it might be something like in down dog, take your right leg high, breathe in, step to warrior one, feet, breathe out, warrior one, inhale, warrior two, exhale, reverse your warrior, breathe in, chaturanga, breathe out, up dog, and that's, inhale, down dog, exhale. Yeah.
That idea of one breath, one movement is a very simple and great way to describe what the challenge is with that kind of class. So really it's, there are things we're going to hold,
mm-hmm.
but
yes,
but there will be things that will be one breath, one movement, big movement, possibly, you know, yes. Possibly a big pose using your whole body in one breath from this to this, from this to this.
And then on the flip side, we will have a lot of, well, a lot is a weird word because most of the classes are an hour. So, but there'll be long
holds. Most classes are an hour.
Well, except Mary Beth's classes. They're an hour plus.
Mm.
I'm telling you, I can still make your Saturday morning 75 minutes.
But then you wouldn't be able to start at 9:30.
You want to talk about non-stealing again, Mary Beth?
I'm a thief.
Back to the breath in power classes, you might hold balancing poses for, well, definitely longer than one breath mm-hmm. sometimes, and longer than maybe four or five or six. And that can obviously be very challenging as well. And we create a challenging atmosphere. The heat and the humidity are, I think they feel amazing, but they're sometimes uncomfortable. They're definitely humbling. Don't worry about how you look in class because everybody is a hot, sweaty mess at the end.
Yeah, you're not going to look good. Don't
wear mascara.
Don't plan on looking or smelling good after class.
Yeah. And so in an hour hot power class, you'll get a good 40 to 45 minutes of yang, which means active poses, and the end of class is yin, which are the passive poses, which are hip openers, some shoulder openers, twists, you know, all floor stuff, essentially. And then your final resting pose, which we call Shavasana. And I should say here that we don't really speak a whole lot of Sanskrit at yoga in our studio because we speak English, and I'm not saying this in any kind of like
mm-hmm.
elitist way. Sanskrit's an old expired language. And if you're new to yoga and I'm teaching you Trikonasana, you might be like, what are you talking about? Now, granted, we might say, come to triangle pose and then say in Sanskrit, this is Trikonasana or something, but Chaturanga is it's almost English at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And Shavasana sounds a lot nicer than corpse pose. There mm-hmm. are certain poses, you know, and all of us throw in some Sanskrit here and there, but generally for the most part, we're speaking English. And, I know that traditional yogis sometimes argue that all yoga should be taught in Sanskrit, but
I've been fortunate to take a yoga class in Ireland, but also in Italy. And that teacher, talk about a challenge. She was speaking Italian and English and Sanskrit and did a pretty bang up job.
We took a class in Mexico, and I mean, I kept up.
Yeah.
Yeah, she did all right too. And James speaks Spanish, so he
does he say Tomatillo?
I don't know. You'll have to ask him. Probably, but not like that. Dude, Tomatillo, dude.
Yeah, how do you say dude in Spanish, James?
I don't know. But you know, like if I really didn't understand her, I just looked at James. But it's it's yoga, right? So it was a really fun experience. It was a cute studio that was somewhat open air, and just it was a really memorable class. So anyhow, yeah, in power, you're going to get a lot of challenge to the breath. Now, anybody can practice power. You can come to power yoga, and yes, we will lead you to some of the deeper and more advanced forms of the poses. You do not have to go there, and not everybody goes there, and nobody is watching you saying, oh my God, Mary Beth's crescent lunge was not deep at all today.
And you will see people doing different things. You will see people skip the push-up and go right back to down dog. You will see people add 3 push-ups in there.
Yes. And it's all so good.
Yeah, that's the deal. It's your handwriting.
I like to think of the word power as it's a really powerful practice to make the right decisions for yourself. And we give you a very... That's my mom.
Oh, your phone?
We give you a very challenging environment to be able to do that in. And will that bring
feel the power?
Yes. Will that bring up frustration and impatience and things like that? Mm-hmm. Yeah, we see it all the time. That's a great tool to practice with. That's a great tool. And it's not, I bring this up sometimes in the middle of class, it's not the beginning of class that's challenging. It's 40 minutes in when you're a sweaty mess and you're like, I don't think I can do one more push-up. Mm-hmm. That's when the practice is, it kind of really shines light on what's going on. So,
and you make your decision.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Are you going to skip the push-up then? How are you going to handle this? You know what I mean? And that's the key. That's like the heart of the class. The heat in our studio is infrared heat. So it's not hot air. It's not furnace heat.
I provide the hot air.
Mary Beth provides the hot air, even in her slow flow. So infrared heat heats objects and not the air. It heats when you come into class. Sometimes people ask us if our floor is heated. It's not. We have it in the Strongsville studio. It's the white panels that sometimes you don't even realize that aren't just part of the decor. They're actually heating you. And in the Brecksville studio, again, it kind of fits in with the rest of the ceiling. If you look up, there are white panels that aren't ceiling tiles. They're a little bigger than ceiling tiles, and those are heating the room. We also pump in humidity so that, well, it's kind of hard to not have a humid environment in Cleveland, but you know, you will sweat. And in Strongsville, it's hot steam, and Brecksville, it's an atomizer, so it looks like dry ice.
Speaking of spooky,
I kind of want to put food coloring in somewhere in the atomizer to see if it'll come out.
On behalf of Janitor James, I would discourage you.
Yeah, I'm not going to do that. So that's what hot power yoga is. We do tend to get a little creative with our sequences and with how the class flows. So, but you will get the traditional sun salutation A and B, and what that means is basically you're going to get the warrior series. You're going to get chaturangas. You're going to get down dogs. You're going to,
they're pretty familiar poses. Yes. The idea is not to trick the practice out with fancy things that you've never heard of.
Exactly. That's not
how it works. It's really just a powerful practice. Again, keep bringing up Jen, but she did all of the power practices, the hot power as well, up until her thyroid surgery and stuff. So truly, you don't have to be intimidated by any class.
No. And so Hot Power Basics is a very classic, I think, form of vinyasa flow. So you will get the same things, the sun A, sun B, extended side angle, balancing triangle. they're going to have less, that those classes are going to have a little less flair, meaning like we may call chair pose and chair twists, but we might not guide you into side crow. Mm-hmm. Not that we guide you into side crow in every power class either, but it's a nice, I like power basics because even though none of our classes at Modern Yoga are scripted, they're not like, I know there's some styles of yoga where it is the same thing over and over and over, and even down to kind of the same script.
Mm-hmm.
That's not how we do it. So it's not like, but in a hot power basics class, you're going to have a lot of consistency, and that's really nice because you can really drop into the poses and take a look at what's going on.
Yeah. So it's like laying the bedrock because you learn all the necessary poses, but I'll probably bring this up every class that we're going to talk about, that it's not a continuum.
Yes.
From yin, slow flow, up to hot power. It's not a continuum. It's not a sliding thing.
Right.
There
you don't
are people
graduate
who,
from one to go to the
right.
other.
There are people who insist on doing certain ones. People will never want to leave power basics. That's their jam. People will never want to leave slow flow. People love the yin, and same with hot power. So it's never, you never have to think of it, well, let me start here. Let me dip my toe in here. Despite the word basics, it's not really a beginner's class, and it's not really necessary before you do any other kind of class.
And on the word basics, we get asked a lot, do we have like a basic class? And I don't want to say we don't. If you breathe, if you can breathe, mm-hmm. you can come in.
Every class can yes. be as gentle or challenging. Every class.
Yes.
And the word basic is not the same as the word beginners.
We're
beginner can come anywhere.
Exactly.
Basics is, you know, there's going to be that basic structure of a power flow. So that mm-hmm. those poses will all be in there.
Yes. Slow flow is another key class that we have at Modern Yoga, and slow flow, it's the same poses. We don't do as much of the strength poses as we do in power, and we'll hold everything for about 3 to 5 breaths. Now, there are some transitional poses. Reverse warrior always comes to mind. I don't really ever hold that one very long because it's hard to breathe in when you're totally mm-hmm. Side bent, but you're going to hold everything for a bit. So not forever though. It's not like a mm-hmm. five breaths isn't a super long time, but it's also not a super short time. Mm-hmm. So you get some time to be in the poses and kind of take a look at them. And then you move. And we generally, and I'm saying, I'm generalizing, don't guide you to really deep forms of the poses. However, you can go there. And if, you know, and you'll attest to this, depending on what's going on in class, you might see that if everybody's dropping in nice and easy, you might guide them to the next step.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it's up to you and making that choice of what's right for you in the moment, mm-hmm. in the breath, really. Slow flow doesn't use any heat. It's not a cold class,
mm-hmm.
but
yeah, we don't do it in a refrigerator, but we don't add the heat, which doesn't mean you don't sweat, but it's a sweat from your exertion, which will be different, you know, for each of us, depending yeah. on what's going on with your body that day. It's more of an exertion sweat. It's funny that you should mention, just yesterday in class, for the first time in a long time, I actually chose to hold reverse warrior.
Did you?
And also halfway lift.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
That's a throwaway in between.
Yeah.
Held that for a long time to sort of feel that as a pose. So
I'll hold halfway lift quite a bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause that one's so important. Because
there's things that we flow through with momentum without even thinking. And, you know, Jane was always one for saying the transitions between the poses are poses within themselves. And certainly that one is. Yeah, the slow flow has brought a lot of conversation amongst teachers because, you know, what does that mean? Where do you draw the line? Does it mean everything moves slower? Does it mean it's all stretchy and rainbows and butterflies come out your butt? And that's not it either.
Not what you're teaching?
It's not what I'm teaching. But speaking of butts, some of the things that teachers have talked about is the chaturangas, the push-up, the high to low push-up and back is something we don't routinely put in that class as often at all. In fact, my joke that, you know, one of my favorite words that I've created is telling people if they want to throw in a vinyasa, high plank, low plank, up dog, back to down dog, they're welcome to, and that we call those people vinyas holes.
No bias, no judgment, Mary Beth.
No, I mean it as a total term of endearment. There's again, there's times that people will put in an extra push-up or two also. And that's the reason why, so that you can make every class what you need it to be, what you're drawn to that day. And there's people going through power flow classes that really struggle in a slow flow.
Yes.
Because of the lack of momentum, there's people in a slow flow that struggle in the power because they're not used to doing that push-up or the heat. And struggle can be good or bad. I mean, you decide. Well, you decide.
And it's different even day to day.
Sure. Know? Oh my gosh. Yes.
But I like that you brought this up for, I've heard so many times, somebody who practices hot power all the time, if they take a slow flow, it's hard. Mm-hmm. It's really hard. And because
for many reasons,
but you have a little bit more time to think about what you're actually doing. So three breaths, and the breaths are the same in class to class. The breaths are the same. I would say that the range that we call it modern yoga of Ujjayi breath is probably 4 to 6 seconds. And like you said, everybody's breath is different. You know, if you're practicing next to somebody who runs marathons, your breath might be a little different if you mm-hmm. just started, and that's okay. Tuning into your breath is good, but generally speaking, we'll call about a 4 to 6 second breath. So that's the same in power, it's slow flow and power basics. So having 2 to 3 to 4 more breaths in a pose is all of a sudden, it's not what pose am I going to next, or like,
right,
you know, by the time you, I don't want to say it's fast because it's not, but
no, there's an energy shift. So a lover of hot power that comes to a slow flow, you'll see some quivering, some shaking. Yes. I'm standing still sweating, and they're like, what? I do this all the time. I do harder stuff than this or whatever, but it's an energy shift.
Yeah. It's good though. It's like a really good self-observation. It's a good way to kind of mm-hmm. take a look at yourself, you know, like,
and it's hard for a lot of people who love hot power. They are type A, they're athletes often, there's other things going on, and it is uncomfortable for them to mm-hmm. slow down.
Absolutely. But there are some type A, well, I shouldn't say, I don't want to do that.
Categorize. Yeah, that was an unfortunate.
No, it,
on my part,
it's okay. Because there are some things that are typical, right? Like the common things that we see. But there are also some people, I think this is more of a mindset, that can come to their mat and say, this is my time to relax, or this is my hour. Yeah, so I feel like every class kind of has a different mindset.
It does. That was a good point you just made, that when people come in, there's a different energy often between slow flow and hot power, which is an interesting perspective. you're right. Like a lot of times slow flowers will say, this is my time.
Yeah.
Earmarked. The hot powerers will come in more agitated, other stuff going on, high energy, anxious.
Yes. Where they need to, they need this to kind of clear their mind.
And I will say, relative to challenging poses, that I'm grateful to Jane for always including them, even though they weren't necessarily power classes.
Yeah.
Because if she had not, I never would have tried some more challenging poses or a hot power class or an Ashtanga class or any of the things I ended up trying, because she slowly just slipped in some things to try that gave me confidence to try those other things. So
for sure, I don't think slow flow eliminates any challenging pose. It just, you're going to get more of that in more challenging poses in hot power and in slow flow. You'll get it. It's just not the majority of the flow.
Yeah.
But I agree with you. And I think it's very important to present challenging poses like handstand or headstand or side crow or
binds.
Yeah. Because if you think you can't do it, then that gives you a whole opportunity to look at why do you think that?
Yeah.
And quite honestly, the journey, the work is more satisfying than I think
it is. And believe it or not, it really is preparing you for those more challenging things. You might not even know it. And then all of a sudden you're like, I did that. I totally could do that. And that's because you've been practicing the other things all along and they are preparing you.
So we're starting to talk a little bit more about poses. And the poses are going to be the same in all the classes. Right? It's kind of how they're presented that is going to change from each class type. I don't want to say the same, because again, it's not a scripted thing. It's not, you know, you may not get side crow in this class, or you may not get, there's some classes where I don't ever call warrior one and I just use crescent lunge, you know, like, but.
Well, again, it's like the alphabet, all the letters of the alphabet make different words and different sentences, but there are all these same letters to choose from.
Yes. And so you get to know those poses. And if you're new to yoga, you can get to know them in any class. You can learn the alphabet in any class, I guess, if we're using the alphabet scenario. Yin classes are a little different because they're almost the opposite of, well, the yang classes. And so in our yin classes, you may start, it may feel like a typical vinyasa class at the beginning, because there will be a little bit of a warm up, and then you're going to get into deep floor, long held stretches. So deep floor, long stretches, floor poses. Most of the yin poses are floor poses. It is a lovely class. So yin physically targets flexibility and the fascia, which is the cell membrane around your muscles and joints that keep your muscles around your muscles that keeps them separate from ligaments and joints. And so it's just kind of like a resetting class. It's really, really nice. And again,
and it's a different kind of challenging. It can be quite a challenge.
Yes.
And it's a still challenge, and it's prolonged, and you can get in your head in all kinds of ways, but there's still breath and a posture.
Yes, absolutely. So again, you don't have to be flexible to do yoga. You don't have to, I don't know what, you don't really have to. You don't have to be anything.
There's no requirements. No,
there's no requirements. Yeah. So what to wear?
You can be disabled. You can be ill. You can be heavy. You can be very thin. You can have an eating disorder. You can have a mental illness. You can have none of those things.
Right.
You can have an athletic you know, endeavor that you're involved in, any and all. Ideally, that's the whole, idea is that it's for everybody. It's that kind of a practice.
So, you know, people ask a lot what to wear. If you're coming to a hot class, I would wear something that you would work out in, something that, maybe sweat wicking. But also you're in down dog quite a bit. So for women and men, you want something that's not going to fall forward over your face. And I'm just saying this from personal experience, kind of a pain in the butt when your tank top's rolling up every time you're folded forward or in a downward facing dog. But
and as you develop your own practice, you do find the favorite way you like to dress. You find, you know, can I wear a bracelet or am I distracted by it in my wrist? Can I wear a necklace or does it fall down in my mouth when I'm in down dog? Do I like to have a towel near me, a water near me? It's so funny because I might be the only person on the planet who has never brought a water into a yoga class. I cannot bear to drink water at any point during any kind of yoga class, which is so weird, but I stay hydrated prior to and after, but I just can't.
I've heard that it's more
growing.
Important to drink before and after than during, but
it's also a good time for a break, though. Sometimes, you know, back
water
off,
does
have a sip.
Tastes amazing when you're sweating it out. Let's talk a little bit.
Corona.
I don't know about that in the middle of the class.
Not in the middle class, but afterwards, you know, with like the chips and guac. Sorry, digressing.
It's okay. Props. Let's talk about props for a moment.
Please, sister.
Take them.
Oh, the props. I don't even want to use the word props. What is the word? They're an enhancer.
Accessories?
Yeah, accessories. An enhancer, like a nice handbag.
Yeah.
Or they earrings or a cool tattoo.
They can make the floor a little closer. They can also turn it up a notch. You can make things much more difficult with a block or two. And you can also make things, I hate to say easier. It's just different.
And one of my favorite in between those two is pyramid pose.
Mm-hmm.
Some people use blocks under their hands for pyramid. Some people don't. I like a block under each hand for pyramid, not to make it easier. Not even to make it harder, it makes it different because I'm able to push my palms into the blocks and draw my forehead all the way down to my shin. It's just a leverage.
Stability for you to do that. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just a leverage situation. I can put my palms on the floor. Yes, I can. I can put my fingertips on blocks. Yes, I can on whatever level. This is something different. This is a leverage thing. And that's the only way I can get it. Is with a block there, and it enables me to deepen my pose so much. And you and I and other teachers struggle with the idea of people who absolutely do not want to use any block or strap or wall or blanket for anything. And we're all on a different wavelength
practice,
for as long
right?
as we are. It doesn't mean you're wrong for not using them, for not wanting to quote unquote, rely on blocks or whatever. Just understand that you might be missing out on something wonderful if you're not even letting yourself explore a little bit. Because every pose has like six different ways you can do it in your own body. And some days you want that. I'm sure some days you use a block for your triangle and some days maybe you don't. And some days maybe you reach for your big toe with your peace fingers. And they're just three different triangles. It doesn't mean one's better, harder, faster, whatever.
Actually, now that you say that, I always use blocks and triangle. I always use two. I'll put one on like the medium side and one on the high side because I like the lift up. And I don't honestly remember the last time I didn't use blocks. So it might be time for me to see how it feels without the block. But I'll still have it right there because I really do like it. But that's clearly becoming my comfort zone. And I might want to step outside my comfort zone for a moment. So props are awesome. And they just give you a different experience. One of my favorite teachers once said, deeper doesn't mean better. It just means deeper.
Mm-hmm.
And And I thought about that for a long time. I'm like, oh, yeah, you know, like it's just a different experience. And
thinking of something really challenging, like a balancing half moon. If you're not willing to use a wall or to use a block, in a lot of cases, there's a good chance you're not experiencing the fullness of that pose, the fullness of stacking your hip or shoulder, simply because of how long your arm is versus how long your leg is and where the floor is. And once you get that, you might be able to lose the block again a few times later, but to really feel that. And that's where our adjustments come into play again now post-COVID, that we're able to start up again. Because, you know, we don't have mirrors in our studios. Some places do. Did you ever see a picture of yourself where you thought you were doing this rock solid, open, balancing half moon or this giant dancer pose? And then you look at the picture and it's like a little stick figure barely lifting up. You know, sometimes things feel one way until you see or feel them in a deeper, to use your word, not better or harder, but just deeper.
Yeah, I think that the, in a way, that the teacher is your mirror to a degree, you know, like, but
so suddenly if you've got big boobs, it's because MB is your mirror.
Speaking of adjusts and assists, they're exactly that. There are two different ways that we may come and touch you. One is to adjust you to get into a better, maybe isn't the right word, but safer alignment. And then an assist is usually to deepen, or there are just some poses, some forms that when our body takes a certain shape, it feels good to press into your low back and down dog, to extend your spine. That is one of my favorite assists. And somebody stands in front of me and pushes up into my low back. I know when I do it, sometimes people will adjust. They think I'm trying to fix them.
Yeah, they'll move their hands.
I'll say, just stay there and feel this, you know, which, and I get that. Like, you don't know until it happens.
That's a good little tip though. If you're not that familiar with yoga and it's hard to have a whole conversation around an assist, but unless the yoga instructor instructs you move this hand back or something, don't move anything. Like be done unto. And it, even with the neck massage, sometimes at the end of a slow flow, somebody will lift up their head like to help me. And it's like, you just relax.
Yeah.
I got this. And that's when some magic happens. But I understand, you know, we've been doing it for so long, you forget that it does feel the first time you're like, oh, wait, should I be moving then?
Exactly. Yeah. On that, sometimes people will say thank you when we put a cold towel on their head. And although that's very appreciated, it's kind of the same thing. Like, this is your Shavasana. Like, you enjoy, you be in Shavasana. I thank you for being here, really. So although
we had an interesting Shavasana in Strongsville yesterday after slow flow, or actually during the entire class as well, because the guy thankfully was fixing the roof leak. So he was up there pounding and drilling and making hilarious noises.
Oh,
yeah, but it was okay. That's a good humored bunch, that Wednesday noon Strongsville.
I'm sure you had fun with that.
We had a good time with it.
The sign was still on the door last night.
Yeah. So the walls were shaking. No big deal.
I mean, what a great time to practice being still, right?
Exactly.
Let the guy fix the roof. You stay in your practice. You stay on your mat. All right. Well, thanks for talking through this. You know, there is no straightforward answer to any of it.
As always, like, email us and ask questions. Like, what confuses you when you look at class types? What surprises you when you've gotten to our class types that didn't meet your expectation? Or just let's have a more fluid conversation back and forth.
Yes.
Yeah, best stuff to talk about.
info@modernyogacleveland.com or Modern Yoga CLE. Either one will get to me, or Joyce@modernyogacleveland.com or Modern Yoga CLE.
All roads lead to Joyce.
All roads lead. And I'll just forward them on to Mary Beth and be like, here, you handle this.
No, nobody forwards emails to me to answer.
While you're in Aruba, I'll be like, hey, I know you're not busy.
So I'm pretty excited about going to Aruba. Jeff and I are going with my sister and her husband. It'll be our third time to Aruba. And first post-COVID big kind of beachy trip. So looking forward to it. But packing is a struggle. But that's okay. That's all I'll say about that.
All right. Well, thank you, Mary Beth. And thanks everyone for listening. And we'll see you. I'll see you next time.
I'll be seeing you. All right, we're done.